Hi there. Do you know what your anxiety profile is? Me, I was a besieged panicker. We often say that the first step to reversing anxiety is to understand it. And that's why we've created a tool to help you discover your anxiety profile. And it's totally free. In about 90 seconds, you'll receive your customized anxiety profile. And it will answer so many questions you've probably been struggling with, including, am I going crazy? And why me? So if you haven't yet, pause this episode and head to lifefreeofanxiety.com/profile or click the link in the show notes. I promise you'll get a lot more out of this and every episode once you know your anxiety profile. And now, on to the show. Hello, hello, back with you for the Life Free of Anxiety podcast. Dr. Barr is back too. He's going to talk about hypochondria, and we are going to discuss how common that is. What to do if you live with somebody with hypochondria during this tense COVID time, and a lot more. So stay with us. Welcome to the Life Free of Anxiety podcast, where each week we'll bring you another discussion to help you on your way to overcoming your fears. I'm Erica, and together with Dr. Charles Barr, a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in anxiety, we'll be your guides on this journey. To find a list of helpful free resources we offer, head to lifefreeofanxiety.com. Because you are not broken, you are not alone, and you are on your way to living a life free of anxiety. But first, I want to say hello to those of you who took the plunge and decided to sign up for Change, the 16-week anxiety program that both Dr. Barr and I use to overcome our own anxiety. Big smile on my face for each and every one of you when I heard you signed up. I'm so excited for the really incredible things that are to come for you. So we are kicking things off officially on August 3rd, and I believe the last day to register is July 31st. So coming up quick, make sure you grab your spot. But before we dive in, I wanted to address something that we've been asked recently, and that is, what does it mean to be a part of the beta launch group? Does that mean that this is a group program? And the answer is, it can be. The short answer is, Change is a 16-week structured proven program. This is the first time we've done it online, so we are limiting it to a small group at first, but it is still a very established program that hundreds of thousands of people have gone through. We've only made some updates. We've only made things better. But yes, this is the first time anybody has done it online. Before that, you were getting papers and CDs mailed to you, which is actually the way I did it. Dr. Barr gave me a packet each week, a physical copy that worked just as well, but this is kind of just a lot easier. So as part of this launch, yes, we will have a place for everyone to gather and support each other. So that's actually another benefit that I didn't have when I did the program that I would have loved. Would be to, you know, have to go through it with other people. But it is totally optional. So we do understand that privacy is important. We encourage you to come up with whatever username you want. We don't want you to necessarily even use your real name. This isn't going to be a Facebook group. We know you probably don't want the whole world knowing your business. Some of you might be a little more open to just, you know, everything. And some of you might not be. We understand that's personal preference. So even if the idea of online discussion does not interest you, it's still there if you need it. So if you want to ask questions or share victories, which I'm so excited for the victories to get shared, or get an opinion from Dr. Barr or myself, we'll be there for you. So you can do this program solo. You can do it from anywhere. Nobody needs to bother you if that's what you don't want, and you don't have to bother with anyone if you don't want. So to find out more about the program, go to change.com/beta. And that's Change with two A's. So double A, change.com/beta, Change with two A's to find out more. Okay, so much good stuff ahead. Let's get to it.
It's good to be back with you. I've had a 3-week break here or so. I always enjoy being on the program. And today we would like to talk to you about hypochondria, especially in this day of COVID-19, when it is on the increase again. Mm-hmm. It's like, Erica, here we go again.
Oh, no. I know that we talked a little bit, too, about what's normal. Dr. Barr and I have both
taken our temperatures in this time. But I think that's a good conversation we're going to get into about what's normal, what's not, how are you checking too much? We're going to talk about that today. But Dr. Barr, I wanted to tell you, I just watched a documentary about David Foster. You know who that is. He's the musical producer of Celine Dion. And I don't know how many Grammys, Emmys, well, I guess not Emmys, but like just a million Grammys winner. Uh-huh. And, you know, just super successful, super rich. But I was watching it and I saw some, you know, it was like a good hour in, and they reveal that he reveals that he has not taken an elevator in 30 years. And my first thought is, wow. I know. And he's taken like something million stairs. And my first thought is like, wow, I'm so glad that somebody can relate to me, even though it's not me anymore. I can take elevators. But my first thought was like, wow, I always felt so weird about that. So I'm kind of glad to see somebody so successful out there who couldn't do it like I couldn't. But then I also thought, I am so, so grateful that that's not my life anymore. Just watching him take all those stairs. And, you know, I have I have a stroller now. I have a baby, and I could not live like that anymore. And so I was thinking,
that's right.
I'm so grateful that in 11 weeks of doing the change program, it's a 16-week program, but in the 11th week, I was taking the elevator and I was, you know, kissing the stairs goodbye, because it's not a fun way to live. It's embarrassing. It's stressful. It's hard when you have all this stuff.
Well, it is stressful. Now, I know that if you're doing that many stairs, you have to be in good shape.
Yeah.
So there's a silver lining maybe, but oh my, I'm so sorry to hear that. I know that's a constant struggle for him. My heart goes out to him.
I know. I wish I could give him the change program.
That's sad.
If somebody knows David Foster, let us know. We'll get him the program.
That's right. That's interesting. And you're right. This severe anxiety and agoraphobia, the phobias, they just are no respecter of persons or position. They don't care whether you're rich or poor. They don't care what race you are. They don't care what your job is.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any difference.
All the resources in the world.
What religious belief you have.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. He's also not a train taker, too, I guess. And all the resources in the world and not able to make this
happen.
Take
advantage of it.
Yeah.
Right.
He could probably have breakfast served to him in bed in the morning. He can have somebody carry his shoes. I mean, he probably, you know, has somebody to take care of every little thing. But yeah, when you don't have the answers, I mean, the avoidant life is the only way. So that's what we do not wish for you at all, which is why we do this podcast. And you know,
exactly.
We definitely encourage you to check out Change, because Dr. Barr and I have both dealt with our own anxiety. I've lived an extremely avoidant life before. But yes, do check out the program if that's something you're struggling with, because I know for a fact you do not have to live like that. And Dr. Barr knows that too.
Yes.
But if you want to learn more about our book on the change program before you ever jump in, there's freefromfearsbook.com. You can check that out. Or the change program is changewith2as.com/beta to learn more. Just I feel like totally compelled to say that because of what we just talked about, and I know how bad it is.
Well, that's right. And speaking of the change beta, our change program is beginning again at the beginning of next month, and is going to be available again for the first time in a year or so.
Yeah, change.com/beta. And that's if you want to be you can be a part of a group. You don't have to be a part of a group. So if you're into privacy or you're not interested in a group, well, you don't have to. You can do this alone. You can do this from anywhere, and you can use our podcast as additional learning and support as well. So yeah, let's talk about hypochondria. And Dr. Barr, can I ask you real fast? This was actually Kyle, my husband's question, and I have not asked you this yet. What is the difference between hypochondria and health anxiety, or is there one? Because I hear about health anxiety a lot these days.
Well, that actually is one of the subcategories that we have broken hypochondria down into recently.
Oh, okay.
Hypochondria really comes out of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 4. And the new one, DSM-5, really eliminates that as a category, even although it's in our popular language. And so, you know, if somebody says, oh, you know, you're a hypochondriac, everybody kind of knows what that is,
yeah,
without really maybe knowing the official definition. So the new categories have broken it into somatic symptom disorder and illness anxiety disorder. And so really health anxiety would probably be in the illness anxiety disorder category. So it's sort of a subcategory of that, of health anxiety.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of checking that's normal. We've both, you know, taken our temperatures. We've both, you know, I have an oximeter,
well,
and that's not obsessive checking. So
yeah. We all are sensitive in nature, and we are all a little bit suggestible, and sometimes
right.
we're more suggestible than others. And when you're in that high anxiety state, you're terribly suggestible.
Mm.
And so if you get an idea in your head, oh no, what if I have X disorder? Boy, it is really hard to get that out of your head.
Yeah.
So you go to the doctor, you get checked out for it, and I'm guilty of that as well, and you said that you are as well. So it makes sense, because we're people who have experienced this anxiety,
mm-hmm.
and we are sensitive. And I know I went to the doctor one time, and I don't remember what it was for, even this, because this was several years back. But I went to him and I said, I think I have this because I have these three symptoms. And he started laughing. He said, well, yeah, you have these three symptoms, but you don't have the two necessary symptoms. It's like, oh, okay. Well, then hearing that totally relieved me, and I could put that away.
Mm-hmm.
It's
like,
harder
you're the
for people
you're
with...
the psychologist, though, right?
Yeah.
The psychologist needing to be talked at.
Like I said, it's no respecter of persons.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
So there are psychologists that experience this. You know, one of the things that, you know, thinking of that, I heard that one of the things that I heard that really surprised me when I first heard it was that there are flight attendants who are terribly afraid to fly.
Wow.
You know, and become phobic of flying. And it's like, wow, I could see how that could happen after I thought about it. So
yeah,
with this disorder, it can get you wherever you may be.
If something offsets you, yeah, anything can kind of switch.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about, well, we're talking about kind of, for you and I, we're talking about people who have not dealt with severe hypochondria. We've had our own anxieties in different ways, but we want to also get it out there that hypochondria is not crazy. Hypochondria is a form of anxiety. It, you know, obsessions
That's right.
can get more serious. And just because we don't have hypochondria and you do doesn't mean you have something really wrong with you. What we want to do is kind of paint what does hypochondria look like right now, especially during this tense time when everybody is sort of checking their temperature, right? So there's a certain degree of that going on that's normal, and that's happening
well,
a lot.
Okay, and why are we checking our temperature? It's because that's one of the primary symptoms of COVID-19.
Right.
So having a fever, chills and sweating, headache, sore throat, loss of taste or smell. Now, that's kind of a unique one to this disorder, although
yeah.
there are other things that can cause that.
Digestive.
A cough, usually a dry cough.
Yeah.
If you start having some of these kinds of symptoms, right now, it's going to be scary to you because your first thought is probably going to be COVID-19.
Right.
Oh, no. What if I have this? So if you have some of these symptoms, call your doctor. Make sure you're going down the right path. But then trust what your doctor is saying to you on this one and get the test and see. And also check yourself. What exposure might you have had to this? Have you been in touch with somebody who is in touch with COVID-19? You know, do you have close contact with a nurse or a first responder or somebody like that? Have you traveled outside the United States in the last 2 weeks?
Those are all very important points. I'm glad you said that. But we also have an article from Medical News Today. It's Timothy J. Legg, and it's just kind of covering obsessions and anxieties. It says here that people who have hypochondria may experience their obsessions and anxieties more than usual during the COVID-19 outbreak, which of course only makes sense.
Okay.
But we've got a couple things that might be a little more worrisome than, you know, somebody who takes their temperature every now and again, or I don't know about worrisome, but just ways to show that it's more of obsession than not. Thinking a cough must be a sign of lung cancer, constantly researching symptoms of illnesses, requesting multiple doctor's visits or calls often on the same day or for the same reason, avoiding certain objects such as door handles in case they're contaminated, repeated checking of the body for symptoms of a disease, and avoiding going to the doctor for fear of receiving a diagnosis. So a lot of things there that kind of show that it's starting to get into the way of your life, or it's gotten in the way of your everyday life. This is pretty much all consuming. Whereas I think, you know, somebody like me, I might read about a fever and think, I feel a little hot, but then kind of just forget that I even thought that earlier in the day because life sort of goes on.
Well, it's interesting in the list of things you were listing there, mentioning, the last thing you mentioned of avoiding the doctor for fear of receiving a diagnosis is just the opposite of earlier where you're making multiple doctor visits and calls, you know, imploring them to please find out what's wrong with you and help me, help me. I know I'm sick somehow. And it's so you're caught in that bind. You know, some people are avoidant of the doctors and scared to death to be at the doctors for fear they're going to hear bad news.
Yeah.
And at the same time have symptoms that scare them that they really do want some answers to, but it's hard to let themselves get the answers. Again, the anxiety just can wreak havoc, and it loves doing that. But we don't want you to be anxious that way.
Yeah. And we've got a little list here about things you can do. There's, you know, you can keep a thermometer by your bedside and check on that maybe once a day. If you can, limit it to that. You can get a face shield. You can use a mask in public always to give yourself that peace of mind. Obviously, these are really everyday things that the CDC recommends anyway. You can keep, you know, the hand sanitizer in your car. But I think there's also things you can do, like making sure you're getting enough sunshine during the day. I know I'm really low on vitamin D right now, probably from my life indoors for most of 2020. So
yes,
sunshine.
I think
can,
that's true for a lot of people, probably.
And sunshine, to me, I think is so huge for just everyday well-being. I personally don't really even feel well until I get a little sun in my day, but I'm such a Southern California person, so that's probably a little bit of why. But I think also you cannot ever underestimate your relaxation exercises. I love what Barbara was talking about on the last podcast about how she was fearful of flying, so she'd get on that plane and she was pretty much like relaxing herself to the point of falling asleep. And I think that's you know, that's what she needed to do. And the change program definitely will teach you how to do that. And amongst many other things that would really help you with this condition, just getting your body relaxed. But you can still, you know, do these on your own at lifefreeofanxiety.com/relax. We have Dr. Barr's excellent relaxation exercise there that you can use. And
another thing that you may do is to keep a journal. Journal about your feelings, journal about where your symptoms are, how bad they are, so that you can put it on paper and try to get a hold of the symptoms and what's really happening to you by putting it on paper. There's nothing magic about that, and yet it's very powerful kind of technique.
Right.
So if you can put it on paper, that will be very helpful to you, I think, and can help you manage the anxiety and manage the fears.
Mm-hmm. And avoid those headlines at all costs, because as far as I'm concerned, the headlines are changing. I don't even pay attention anymore unless it's something I really need to know, like California shut down hair salons last week. Well, I needed to know that. But as everything else, I'm tired of the back and forth. So I just think that's a big deal. Just these headlines, I think, can do just terrible damage, especially to sensitive types.
Yes, they can. They're very frightening. So do limit your news intake. That's one of my
that's one
favorite
of your
recommendations to people is always do a check on how much are you listening to the news, because it is, especially if you're in a sensitized state, there is no good news or hardly any good news. It's just too much bad news to it will overwhelm your system.
Yeah, I think too, sometimes when you go out and maybe you also come home and you think, did I just catch the coronavirus? Well, I would ask myself too, like, did somebody sneeze right by you without a mask? Did somebody cough directly on you? Did you know for a fact you put your hand on something and didn't sanitize after, where somebody directly put germs? And if all those answers are no, you know, even if somebody sneezed with a mask, you're very unlikely to catch it. I mean, if you're going to masked zones like the supermarket and such, I just want to just remind you that the masks are really just mostly for in case somebody sneezes. I mean, really, it's because
sneezes or coughs.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Sneezes or coughs.
And so what we're really recommending is to try to use your thinking to control your anxiety. You know, use what's probable and what's possible.
You know,
and we want you to focus on, okay, well, what's probable? Is it possible you caught it? Yes, it's possible, but
unlikely.
Is it probable?
Yeah.
No.
Right.
None of these things happened that would up my chances.
Yes.
So we want you to try to see if that probability will be of help to you.
Dr. Barr, I wanted to ask, for the person who is living with somebody with hypochondria during COVID-19 and are maybe, you know, being asked to, you know, to really socially distance from the world or to really, you know, hunker down with this person who has hypochondria. Maybe the person who does not have it is feeling like, this is too rigid, this is too strict, I can't handle how much my whoever I live with, you know, wants me to live a certain way. That's not how I feel. What would you say to somebody who lives with somebody with hypochondria?
Severe anxiety in any of its forms, including hypochondria, takes a toll not only on the person who has it, but on the people who live with that person.
Uh-huh.
So it's not just the people with hypochondria that have, you know, those folks have a problem, and their loved ones have a problem too. And what I would say to the people who are living with them is try to find ways that you are not feeding into their system. You don't always have to directly challenge them, because oftentimes that doesn't help. But maybe you as a family member can talk about the probability of something happening rather than the possibility, because your loved one is engaged in possibility thinking rather than probability thinking.
Mm.
So you can bring in that voice of reason a little bit, hopefully. But I do understand that family members are also highly affected by the person who has these kinds of disorders. So it's hard to make a blanket statement, but I would say to the families that we understand that it's difficult for you as well, and try as best you can not to cooperate and get trapped in your loved ones.
Yeah.
They're already trapped. And if you join them in the trap, that doesn't necessarily help them.
Have you seen people have success with hypochondria who did the change program? You've walked so many people through it in your office. I'm just curious, would that apply here?
Actually, I have.
Uh-huh.
I've had two or three people who had very difficult health anxiety or symptom checking, very debilitating kinds of things that have really gotten significantly better and freed themselves up to be able to go and do and not be in such an obsessive worry.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that obsessive worry is one of the hallmarks of hypochondriasis as well. You know, you're just always worried about your health and what the symptoms are and what dread thing you're going to catch next.
Yeah. That's cool
so,
to know that
yes,
they got help.
It has helped, and I think it will help.
I'm sure that's cool for you too, from a perspective of starting and seeing so much worry to seeing, you know, success of not. Because I think that probably with hypochondria, people might think that their thoughts aren't going to turn off no matter what, because that might feel more exotic that they, you know, they worry about something so specific and maybe that's not curable. Anxiety looks so different all the time. I think we all convince ourselves that ours is the worst. It's the most exotic. It's the most unheard of and untreatable. So I think it's probably fun for you to see the end results that are so great.
Well, I'm not sure fun is the word, but rewarding certainly is the word.
Okay.
You know, it is very rewarding to watch someone walk their way out of anxiety and to shed themselves and get rid of the terrible feelings of angst that they endure and start living rather than just enduring. And so that is very rewarding. And I just really want to encourage people to check out the Change program with us at change.com.
Beta.
Because that slash beta, I keep forgetting that.
That's okay.
And because it is a highly effective treatment that has freed many, many people and will continue to do so. And we would love for people to take advantage of that. I went through it myself with my own anxiety, and you went through it as well. So
yep.
we are recipients of this program as well as providers of it.
Yep. And let's see, we've got a question from a listener, which kind of has to do with what we're talking about, because the Change program is great for everything that has to do with this. But what would you tell our listener who wants to know what she can do about a racing mind before her doctor's appointment?
A racing mind. Boy, that the racing mind before a doctor's appointment in particular, I don't know if you've had this experience. I certainly have. I'll go to the doctor and I want to have two or three questions answered, and I get back home and it's like, I totally forgot to ask that question.
Mm-hmm. Like every month when I was pregnant.
And I don't necessarily consider myself having a racing mind, but you get there and things happen and the doctor starts talking about something else. You completely lose track of where you are, and you get out of there without having asked the questions.
Yeah.
So one of the things that can be helpful, particularly if your racing mind is connected with the doctor visit itself, is to write down your questions for the doctor. Take that list of questions with you, and you might even give it to the doctor. You might even hand it to your doctor and say, here are the questions that I am dealing with and would like some input on.
Mm-hmm.
You can say to the doctor before he or she gets up to leave, because they don't want to give you very much time, as you well know, let me check my list of questions here before you go, so that you at least have that. You can consider it a cheat sheet if you want, but I think that's a very important thing to be able to do. The other thing is to breathe. Let your mind calm down. Try to breathe and let your body relax. Talk to yourself about slowing your thoughts down, letting your body become more relaxed, and trying to slow the whole thought process down. That is a very uncomfortable symptom of the anxiety, is when your mind just takes off and it's racing.
Yeah.
And it's hard to even capture the thoughts sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They go by so quickly.
Yeah. And I think the whole, what did I hear one time? If your body's calm, your mind is calm. So yeah, even those relaxation exercises leading up, maybe by a week or a month or as much as you can before that appointment coming up, could be a big help to you.
Good.
For sure. Well, I think that's it, Dr. Barr. Is there anything else you wanted to add about this episode?
One other thing I would say, Erica, I noticed that you have a little meter that measures the oxygen on your finger.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the correct pronunciation on that is oximeter.
Oximeter. That's why you went to medical school and I didn't. Well, was it technically medical school for you, or was it?
No, I didn't go to medical school, but well, I believe that's the correct.
You know a lot of medical stuff in general. I've
yes.
noticed. Yeah, I thought it was oximeter because that's how it reads, but
that's right.
I like, my mom was always such a stickler on pronunciation. She, you know, her first language is Spanish, and she's a real big lover of the English language too. So growing up and mispronouncing things was never okay. So for me to get corrected is actually a very positive thing because of how I was raised.
Well,
thank
good.
You.
I'm glad.
Thank you. Yes. What is it? Say it again.
Oximeter.
Oximeter. I need to spell oximeter. It wrong so I won't see the Y. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
The emphasis is on the second syllable.
I see. This has been so educational in so many ways. I think this episode is a good one, and I'm glad we're all going to walk around the right pronunciation, oximeter now.
There you go.
And just so everyone knows, Dr. Barr is coming off a tent sleepover with his grandkids, so we're glad he was able to get enough sleep last night to come on and do this show with us and be positive, but it sounds like he slept pretty well because he had an air mattress. That was our
That's
debate
right.
you didn't
I
hear off
of. The kids ended up electing that I could be on the air mattress, so that was good.
that's so nice of them.
We had a great evening.
You're a fun grandpa.
They slept better than I did.
All right. Well,
wonderful.
Yes, let's talk next week. What do you say?
Sounds good to me.
All right. And
hope you all will join us.
Yes, join us and rate us. It's always a good day to rate us wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can send me an email at erica@lifefreeofanxiety.com. I'm always happy to chat with you. So erica@lifefreeofanxiety.com, and have a great day.
Okay. See you next week.
All right. Well, that is a wrap. Hope you enjoyed that episode. It was great to have Dr. Barr back. Don't forget freefromfearsbook.com. That is kind of the foundation of the program. So if we've piqued your interest in this episode, which I hope we have, head to freefromfearsbook.com. If you want to find out more about change, that's change with two A's, head to change.com/beta. And we put together a little video that explains a lot about the program and why it's helped hundreds of thousands of people overcome anxiety. So not a new program we came out with. Nope. Already established, just updated, a little bit better now, a little bit simpler, a little bit more with the times and technology, but same proven techniques to help you overcome anxiety, which, like I said before, helped me, helped Dr. Barr. That's change.com with two A's /beta. Okay, thank you for being here today, and lots of good stuff ahead on our podcast that we're excited to bring to you. I will talk to you soon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope that something in today's conversation provided you with a feeling of hope, determination, or purpose. I know what you're going through, and that's why I want to give you some of the tools that helped me in my anxiety journey. To get a free copy of Free From Fears, head to freefromfearsbook.com. To find out more about the Change Anxiety Treatment Program, find us at changedwith2as.com. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are not broken, you are not alone, and you are on your way to living a life free of anxiety. See you next week. Before you go, I wanted to give you one last reminder to discover your anxiety profile at lifefreeofanxiety.com/profile. Going forward, we really think this should be the starting point for everyone's anxiety journey. Once you're done, you'll probably wonder how we could learn so much from just a few questions. It really is amazing. What you don't see is behind the scenes, your responses are compared to what we've learned from helping over 200,000 people just like you reverse their anxiety over the past 40 years. It's a data-backed assessment with real insights. I promise it's worth 90 seconds of your time, and it's totally free. Just click the link in the show notes or head to lifefreeofanxiety.com/profile, and I'll talk to you again soon.